But does it? Did any of us like RoboCop?
No.
No.
No. Okay. Good.
God, we're all gonna hate on it.
Well, you know what? We'll talk about it when we talk about it. But yeah. real quick. Yeah, it's on. The first one's on Netflix streaming right now. Have you watched it recently?
RoboCop? Never seen it.
Oh my god! Have you seen RoboCop recently? The first one?
No.
Because they're I don't know why they're promoting it on streaming right now, but I just watched it last week. And it's so good. Really? Like it's like a perfect satire film, really, if you go back and watch it. Yeah. And yeah, well, fuck it, whatever. We'll figure it out.
The internet has given everyone in America a voice, and evidently everyone in America has chosen to use that voice to bitch about movies. This is a site populated by militant movie buffs. Sad, pathetic little bastards living in their parents' basement, downloading scripts and what they think is inside information about movies and actors they claim to despise yet can't stop discussing.
I guess let's get right into it here. We'll introduce ourselves in case anyone's forgotten us.
Everyone's forgotten us.
Yeah, I think it's been 2 years. Since we've done a podcast.
It's been longer than that, hasn't it?
I was gonna say, it's been longer.
I obviously don't know the history of the podcast as well as the others.
I don't think it's been over three.
I think it was 2009.
Okay.
Something like that. I was about to say 2009.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's maybe been 3 years since
we're 9 plus 3 equals 12. Yeah.
So it's been 3 years. It's JC.
I'm Adam, still. And
I'm David.
He's David.
Still.
He's still David.
Does David still hate everything?
No.
What's a good movie you saw in the last 3 weeks?
Or 3 months. I'll push three months for you, David.
Yeah, 3 months.
Shit. The one with Matthew McConaughey, the Killer Joe.
Killer Joe's fantastic. I watched it 2 nights ago.
I haven't seen it yet, but I respect your opinion. I'll check it out.
All right, so we're back. It's been 3 years, like I said. I think we definitely didn't choose the correct screenplays for our first episode back. So I'm going to try and ease into it a little bit, and we're going to go way back to the beginning of when we started doing this, which was in March of 2009. And we're just going to look at the screenplays we talked about on the podcast and try and remember what we thought of the scripts, and then talk about what we thought of the finished product since it's been so long. Few of them have been made, obviously not all of them. But back in March, we talked about Brothers Bloom screenplay, and I can't even remember if we'd seen the movie when we talked about the screenplay. But I know I love the screenplay, and Adam?
I remember liking the screenplay. Because I know that I still like the screenplay more than I like the film, and I like the film.
It's one of my favorite screenplays ever still. That's one of the ones I recommend to everyone.
I don't know if we reviewed it before we watched it, but I know we read it before we watched it, because I knew that I had read it before I watched it.
What about the screenplay? Why do you recommend it so highly? What about it makes you so gaga?
I'll tell you this much. It's nothing that, and I love Rian Johnson, but it's nothing that Rian Johnson did necessarily. The tone and the atmosphere that I actually created in my head was like, you know, you read a novel and you always say, oh, but it was, the book is so much better because you've created that, the look and the feel of the world yourself. It's one of the few screenplays that allowed me to do that, just like any other novel. So it was a little unfair to, when you go see it, that it did not live up to that expectation. But the only like concrete criticism I would say is it took itself a little too light in some spots, where I thought it was going to be darker whenever I read it. So that would only be the big difference. It's not like I thought it was bad, or I thought the screenplay was just, you know, light years ahead, but that there was that separation.
As a screenplay, it reads incredibly dark, and I think it's because we'd seen Brick before. So not knowing Rian or anything, of course, we had no idea as a person, and just assumed that he was just going to keep writing dark things. So it reads incredibly dark, and they are still, you know, the little con man type characters. So you expect it to be dark, and it's a really lighthearted film. But that script shows you how to write and entertain an audience at the same time and just keep them guessing, and it's just really well written.
And I will say the advertising, like the trailer and all of like the very few TV spots for the Brothers Bloom, which I know Ryan had nothing to do with,
were just like Looper.
Yeah, were terrible. And they were almost like romper room lighthearted. And I was like, yeah, what the fuck? And I know that has nothing to do, that's a fair criticism with the, you know, the director or the writer or anything like
or
that.
Or the finished product.
Or the finished product. But it just, it set a different expectation as soon as you walked in.
See, I never read Brick. I've never seen Brick. I never read the Brothers Bloom screenplay. Brothers Bloom was actually the first Rian Johnson movie for me. And I didn't know what to expect from it, so I didn't get what you guys got. Like, it didn't seem like a dark movie at all.
Yeah, it wasn't.
That's what we're saying. The tone struck in the finished product was so much lighter than I expected. But I still liked it. Did you enjoy it?
To a point, like, I think screenwriting somewhat has ruined my enjoyment of movies to a certain degree. Because there's certain aspects introduced early on where you know that's going to come into play.
Yeah.
Like, I kind of had it figured out what was going to happen towards the end. Like, I kind of saw the scene coming together.
Did we all read Looper?
Yes.
Before watching the movie?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Let's do an impromptu Looper here. Let's talk about Looper.
Okay, well,
which was like 2 years ago when I read it.
It's the exact opposite of The Brothers Bloom. It was exactly what I had what he wrote was so well crafted. It was exactly what it was in my head, and it's exactly what he delivered. That was like from his head to the finished screenplay, I think might be one of the like best
translations
that I've ever seen. I'm not saying it's the best film I've ever seen, but he definitely nailed what he wanted to nail, in my opinion.
He had the opportunity to make the movie exactly the way he wanted to make it,
and he did. I don't know if he ever made one compromise. At least it didn't seem like it's made.
Not from the script.
No.
To the movie. I mean, besides switching Paris to China, which had no effect on the actual.
I actually enjoyed that change a lot more.
Really?
Fuck Paris.
I'm not even saying necessarily in, you know, the pacing or the story itself, but just in tone, in atmosphere, in production value, I think it's exactly what he set out to do and exactly what he planted in the reader's head when the draft leaked or however it came out.
But I didn't think it was as strong a movie, though, as Brothers Bloom. Even though I saw what was coming in Brothers Bloom, like when you see the blood in the beginning, you kind of know how it's going to end. But in this one, I was hoping he changed the ending because it didn't seem as strong.
Is that because of how it's kind of a non-traditional ending?
It's not really non-traditional. I mean, both of them have the guy, you know, dying. It just depends Spoiler on alert. Whether you're attached to it. Yeah. Although in my screening, I had people wanting to kill the kid, so I don't know.
Well, I tell you this much. I wanted to kill the kid when I read it. But I did
They're
not.
Like, Bruce, do it.
Yeah, I did not whenever I was watching it. Because that kid was a really strong performance by him.
It's a good thing, though. He's a good filmmaker.
Yeah, I think he will. His talent will rise with, you know, with the level of pressure and stuff like that. I mean, it won't. You know, he's no Brett Ratner.
And okay, so we did Brothers Bloom on the first episode, and we also did Fuck Buddies by Liz Merriweather.
Oh Jesus Christ!
Yeah.
Which went on to become was it Ashton Kutcher?
That's the Ashton Kutcher one.
Because there was that one and the Justin Timberlake one, which were essentially the same movie.
Because the Justin Timberlake one, I think, was better.
It was better, but there was No Strings Attached. Is that...
You know, I don't even remember.
Yeah, that was it was directed by Ivan Reitman, too, which is even more saddening.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Well, hold on.
Most people don't realize that... Ivan Reitman directed Fuck Buddies.
Okay, which became No Strings Attached.
Yes.
The other one's called Friends with Benefits?
Friends with Benefits, which is a better movie. Not by much, but it does have better moments.
Well, he doesn't have Ashton Kutcher in it.
That's... So JT's a decent actor.
So, He is, you're right. Did you just call Justin Timberlake JT? Like,
yeah,
you guys,
we're bros.
You guys hang out on the weekend?
We're bros. I was invited to the wedding.
Okay, you just couldn't.
I still can't talk about it, but I was invited.
It's the embargo. But yeah, because I know I liked Fuck Buddies. I know I haven't gone back and listened to what I said, but I can tell you this much. I know that I don't think I've disliked anything from Liz Merriweather that I've read or anything like that. So I know I enjoyed Fuck Buddies and did not translate well.
It didn't translate at all. And I think maybe that's why nothing else that she's written has been made.
Well, she has a television show.
That does not count.
She's a showrunner on a television show. Anyway, what do you want me to do?
It's the one with the, what's her name, though?
Yeah, it's the new girl on Fox.
Yeah.
That's, I'd say what, it peaked, and I think it's leveled out right now. Mm-hmm. But it's not bad, and it actually has good characters, and it's got good moments. I don't know. I haven't kept current with it, but I was for a while.
Mm.
But
I'm starting to rethink bringing the podcast back now.
Why?
The new girl.
Well, it's alright, fine. let's go through the shows that you have watched consistently and it just, listen to you.
People just watch
everyone.
It to Google Zooey Deschanel. That's it.
You think so? I don't necessarily. I think maybe that was a draw at the beginning, and you could tell from the ads. Like the print ad.
Well, she gave the puppy dog eyes in the ad. I mean,
yeah, exactly.
They were definitely,
hey, I'm just the new girl.
Yeah, huh. And they were leaning on that. You're absolutely correct. But I think they pushed some of the periphery characters to the front. But we're veering off track. Liz Merriweather, I don't know what she's I don't know what she's doing now, other than being showrunner on that.
Yeah, I don't either. All her scripts had a really strong voice, and I remember liking Fuck Buddies. Can't stand the movie. Watched it once just because I was such a fan of the script, and it's just an awful movie.
Well, at least I didn't have a choice. I was dragged into watching it, which was horrible, and I didn't like the script because it felt Diablo Cody-ish. That's the chick.
Yeah, that's... They're very similar writers.
I don't need that much snark in my screenplay.
Okay.
Yeah, she's a good writer. I'm just saying, just personal taste. I don't need
that. Well, at
that
level, they all better be good writers, but unfortunately, sometimes they're not.
That was episode one. Episode two, which was, I think, a week later, back when we actually didn't have shit to do, we talked about Miss March, which was written by... Why Does Kids You Know?
Zach Kreger wrote that?
Zach Kreger and Trevor Moore. And did you ever watch the movie?
No.
Miss March?
I didn't. I will take it back. I've seen bits and pieces.
Have you seen it, David?
No, I have not seen it.
So
didn't read the screenplay either.
I'm the only one. I don't remember what we said about the screenplay.
We said it was... I think we said it had some funny moments, maybe, but it was... We knew it was going to be bad.
Yeah, and it's a bad movie.
Yeah.
It has its moments, but overall, it's a bad movie. And then we also talked about Inglourious Basterds.
It's just as good as the film, in my opinion.
I was going to say, we both really liked the screenplay.
Yeah, and it's, you know.
And I don't care for the movie, so.
Oh.
I think we've already established
that. Did we talk about that before?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if we talked about it or not. I hate Eli Roth, so pretty much you put him in a movie and it's hard for me to get entertained.
They even pared his role down in the final cut as compared to the screenplay.
They probably didn't have a choice because he's fucking awful.
All right.
I'm sure they filmed
There's no reason for Eli Roth to be in a movie that long.
There's no reason for Eli Roth to exist.
So you just cut that sentence. There's no reason for Eli Roth, period?
Yeah.
All right.
Insert.
Okay. as far as the quality of the film compared to the quality of the screenplay, I would call that even. I'm not saying it's like Rian Johnson where the exact thing that you think it's going to look like is what you saw. You know, it's pretty damn close. Actually, it's really close. But if I said the screenplay was a 7, I'd say the movie's a 7 or whatever.
Yeah. I enjoyed the movie. I just didn't agree with all of the buzz and everything that came along with it.
Well, that's what's going to happen when it's Tarantino's new movie. I mean, prepare yourself for that in about a month from now when they're doing everything for Django, which is going to be awesome.
And that's fine. He deserves it. Everyone was calling it his masterpiece, and if you look at his body of work, to me, that movie is not Tarantino's masterpiece.
I mean, and that's fine. That's a perfectly acceptable criticism. But I mean, if we're still going back to, did we think it was going to be what we had in our head from the screenplay? I pretty much did. Yeah.
Did you?
I enjoyed the screenplay. I think the opening is one of the best things I've read in a long time. Still,
I agree with that.
It just plays so damn well, too, on the big screen. It's not even funny.
Mm-hmm. That scene is actually...
It's really good.
Yeah.
And I enjoyed the black and white moments, picturing those better than when they're in color in the movie. I was disappointed watching the movie.
Is that when she's remembering her past?
No, it's when she's... When they're showing her at the theater and, like, just kind of like her day-to-day life at the theater.
That was in black and white. It was supposed to be in black and white.
I think that entire chapter was supposed to be in black and white.
Oh, that's right. We talked about that.
And in the movie, it's all color.
Don't want to confuse that American audience.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm one of those people.
So are we. I mean, I don't know.
We are.
No, I'm just saying, like, I just get annoyed when... I feel like it had been too much if he had tried to do that. It's like, we get it. You like foreign films. Chill out.
Tarantino likes every movie.
Let's say he doesn't just like foreign films. He just like movies.
Yeah. And then, let's see. Let's go on to the next episode where we talked about 500 Days of Summer.
Ooh, great movie. Not...
He does hate
Did everything. You read the screenplay?
He hates everything.
No, I didn't read the screenplay.
Okay.
I heard it was supposed to be really good, and I watched it, and I was like, oh, fuck.
You heard mostly wrong about the screenplay, unless you were talking to Adam.
No, I don't remember which one of you guys actually liked it. I liked it. Adam, though, probably.
Yeah, I liked it.
Yeah.
And
I think Adam really liked the movie, too.
Yes, but as... Like I was saying, Quentin Tarantino about even.
Yeah.
I'd say the screenplay for 500 Days of Summer is better. Not a whole lot.
Yeah.
But it is. And I think Mark Webb showed with Spider-Man that he is just not quite ready to take on directing.
Dude, that Spider-Man movie is fucking awful.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
Those skateboarding scenes were off the wall. I don't understand what you're talking about. It's awesome.
Yeah.
I like that he's on. He has a completely different perspective on everything. Are you being sarcastic right now?
Yes, I'm being very sarcastic. Right.
Yeah. Totally sarcastic.
Yeah, but yeah, so 500 Days of Summer, the film, which I enjoyed, probably not as good as a screenplay. And the next film that we did on that was I Love You, Man. And
we both liked that screenplay.
Did we?
Yeah.
I liked the movie well enough. I think it was, but you know what? It's become forgettable. Yeah. I
don't remember what that is. What is that movie about? I even watched it.
It's Paul Rudd slapping the bass.
Paul Rudd and Jason Segel, where they just become bros. It's a bromance movie.
Yeah.
You know, now was that a Apatow producer or Apatow direct movie? I don't think he directed
produced.
It.
I think it was produced. John Hamburg,
that's
I think,
right.
directed
that's right.
it.
You're right, you're right. And it's become forgettable. I mean, it was funny.
It was a funny movie.
Yeah. So it's probably about even about what I expected, but I did not think it would just kind of just get lost in the whatever, but it did. I forgot completely about it.
Yeah, I still don't even know what it's about.
Well, it's not about anything.
Yeah, it's a typical Apatow production where it's not really about anything. It's just supposed to be funny.
Oh. Was it 2 hours?
Yeah. It was probably actually 2 hours long. Yeah,
it felt a little long, too. Yeah. I think, they're mandated to be 20 minutes longer than they should be.
Yeah.
An hour longer than they should be.
Typically, all movies are an hour longer than they should be.
Well, no, like, Funny People, isn't that what Apatow's movie was?
Funny People is two 90-minute movies welded together.
Yeah. And we
Jesus
actually
Christ,
did a,
that movie is so long.
Yeah, we did a podcast on that too, where I think we said the same thing about the script. Like, it's got moments, but
yeah,
but this is a 140-page comedy screenplay.
It didn't become forgettable though. People still remember it. Fuck it. I'm not gonna defend it. It's all right.
Yeah, it's just all right. Since we're talking about Apatow in screenwriting, of course, on here, I read that one of the first things he wrote was a Simpsons spec back in the day, and he just happened to drop that in an interview this past week, and turns out now the Simpsons want to make his spec script for the Simpsons that he wrote. however, 20, 30 years ago.
Well, that's not surprising because the Simpsons are now relying on gimmick just to survive. I mean, they need that to tread water.
Yeah, I know.
Actually, the complaint that the Simpsons suck, I think, is now older or has lived longer than the time period where the Simpsons were good. And I think that's, you know, an antiquated and tired criticism. But it's true. They need something like that week to week just to be competitive. So I'm sure it was no accident that he mentioned it and no accident that it's now happening and will completely mediocre and barely serviceable.
I don't understand why.
Yeah, that was so mean. I had no reason to shit over the Simpsons.
You took the Simpsons and just ran them into the ground. But I don't understand why he aimed so low. I mean,
who?
Judd Apatow. I mean, number one, he's
it's free for him.
He wrote it,
and he'll probably rewrite it a couple times or whatever, and it'll just be a thing that because he probably likes the Simpsons, and so he'll do this. Not because it's going to make him bigger or, you know, or anything like that. It might get his name out there for This Is 40.
Prediction. In the next week, Brett Ratner in an interview is going to drop that he has a spec script from 20 years ago for Star Wars Episode 9.
Maybe.
I hope to God you're wrong.
You know what I hope, and I'm sincere when I say this. I hope to God Disney gives Star Wars to Brett Ratner. I'm telling you right now, it would be it'd be like watching a train wreck that caught on fire and fell off a cliff and landed on a monastery. That's how beautiful of a disaster it would be, and I'm rooting for it. Brett Ratner should not only direct the new Star Wars, he should write them.
Everybody'd be like, "Hey, that George Lucas, not such a bad guy after all. Let's go back to him."
I just want to see it just destroy itself because it already has. The Star Wars franchise is undead at this point.
Really, you don't believe there's a chance that somebody could do something interesting with it again and make it good again?
I do, but I don't want that.
You just want it to end.
And people are yearning for it. They will give anybody a chance. I know today the news broke that maybe Lawrence Kasdan might do another, and I think it's bullshit. I don't think it's going to happen.
No, but it's him and Kinberg
is that official? Confirmed.
Yeah. Oh. Are working on the next episodes 8 and 9. Seven is the guy who wrote Toy Story 3.
Okay, I knew.
And Little Miss Sunshine.
Okay.
But yeah, no, they're saying that Kinberg, who I don't think has anything good, is going to work with Kasdan on episodes 8 and 9.
We'll see. But I think people are yearning so much to be like, okay, let's get back into Star Wars. And so they'll give anything a chance to be legitimate. They will, including all hardcore Star Wars fans and even the casual ones. But I'm just to the point where I'm just like the Indiana Jones movies. I would love to see them just
stop
or just become a joke.
Yeah.
I have no problem with that.
Indiana Jones kind of did.
Well, yeah, it did. But with those names, with the names attached.
Oh, you want it to be official with, like, goofy names like, you know, Brett Ratner. You don't want it to be with Steven Spielberg.
No.
Yeah, I want it.
Not anyone prestige,
I want it to go down in flames with someone completely schlocky attached.
Like Mick G's Star Wars episode.
Yeah, oh, my God. If Mick G and Brett Ratner teamed up for the Star Wars trilogy, I would camp out. I would, and I would laugh my way the whole time. I would love it.
Yeah, let's get back on. Okay, episode 4, which this is the first one I'm going to eat my shit on, is Cabin in the Woods.
I think both you guys didn't like that one.
Fairly certain that we both...
See, I don't remember disliking it, but maybe I just...
I don't think either of us liked it.
Really?
And I don't know if it's because we didn't... I think we knew what it was going for, we just didn't...
I knew.
The only thing
I can remember is knowing that I thought the ending was a cop out.
Yeah, it read that way in the script, and in the movie, I think when it's happening and all the monsters are coming out and just destroying everything.
Does it seem to happen earlier in the film than it does in the screenplay?
Not really.
No. Okay.
I think what helps is the movie. Again, it came down to execution.
Oh yeah, I know the movie's great.
Yeah.
The ending I still felt was a little messy, but I enjoyed
it. But it had decent actors, so all the lines in the script that came off is that cheesy, just we're going to take this dialogue straight from an 80s movie and insert it into our 2011 horror movie and then just throw them into a cabin. It actually came off okay, somehow. I still don't understand it. It's got to be in the acting, because it's not like they're saying anything different than you'd see in a fucking Jason movie.
It's all about tone and then, you know, how it corresponds to what you expect and what you've seen. And, you know, and they did a good job. If I didn't like it, the screenplay, and I thought it was going to be bad, then I was wrong.
And then, let's see, the next episode, we talked about Adventureland by Greg Matoya.
Wow, it's been almost a half decade, and you still don't know how to pronounce his last name. did I like?
I think we both thought the screenplay was okay. I don't think we loved it by any means. The trailer had came out, so, and the trailer was actually really good, of course, like most trailers are. So we decided to read the screenplay, and we found out that, obviously, most of the good bits were in the trailer.
I think I remember the movie being boring.
Yeah, I found it to be incredibly boring.
Really? You didn't like Kristen Stewart's, you know, stone face for the 18th time?
That's not her stone face. That is her poop face. I refer to that as, that is what, we all know what Kristen Stewart looks like when she's pooping, because she wears that face all the time. And she bites her lip when she has, like, a hanger on. Yeah. That she's terrible.
Oh my god. And she's made a shitload of money off Twilight.
Yep. So it doesn't matter.
No, it does not.
Because then she can go and make movies where she gives dudes handies. She's pterodactyling them in the front seat. Then the next one, we talked about Balls Out, which still is never going to get made.
I thought the movie was better than the Scream. Yeah, I think the Balls Out movie was much better than the script, but mostly because the writers can't write, but that director can direct. And yeah.
I thought when he runs down the beach and takes a shit in the screenplay wasn't really well written.
Yeah,
perfectly executed in the film.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, he lays a deuce.
Well, it's
and that's all one take.
It's because bits of poo are flying out as he's running.
Yeah,
and
so you know that they had to wait. Yeah, they had to wait.
While the Chariots of Fire theme is playing in the background.
They had to wait, like, till he was ready to shit. And then he's like, that trash can's a long way away. So it just kind of starts happening before he gets there.
Maybe one day they will make that movie.
I hope so.
Did we do anything else with that one? What year, that year, that episode?
We did Greenberg. But
oh, God. You know, I thought about that movie. It's by, what's his face that writes all the shit?
Noah Baumbach.
Noah Baumbach, yes. Who, for some reason, I like.
Mm-hmm.
Though he gives me so little reason to like him.
It's a love-hate thing.
And
it's because he co-wrote The Life Aquatic.
That's what it is. And I like Squid and the Whale.
Squid and the Whale, yeah.
But I thought randomly about Greenberg the other day, maybe a week ago or so. And I was surprised that, I was like, oh shit, that was a movie that happened. Like, I hadn't thought about it in years. And you want to talk about infinitely boring.
Mm-hmm.
That's like
Greenberg. Was that with Ben Stiller?
Yeah, correct. See, you just, I just like popped a little bit in your brain that you thought was gone for good. Because that movie was so forgettable and so boring. But it was written as such, really.
Yeah. I mean,
I don't know why I was surprised. So.
You got exactly what was in the script.
Yep.
Then the next one we talked about, Round Table and Knights, which I don't think either of those have been made.
It's so funny that it was so hot that there was essentially two of those in the market.
Buying, yeah. I think they both got ate up.
I think one went for quite a bit.
Yeah.
And neither of them did anything.
And they were both decent scripts. Then the next week we did Pierre, which is still, there's rumors and crap attached to that every other week, it seems like, of who's going to play Pierre and who's going to direct it.
When we read it, wasn't it going to be Jim Carrey?
Yes, because he was attached to it. That's why it sold for $1 million. And we couldn't believe that it sold for $1 million. And we still cannot believe what. And then the movie's going to come out, and we're going to still not believe.
Oh, my God. The Invention of Lying. That movie made $2 and some.
And it was no good.
No, it wasn't.
It was the Ricky Gervais movie.
Did you watch that, David?
Yeah, not a good movie.
Did you read it?
Didn't read it. I haven't read most of these.
It did not read too poorly. Did I say that correct? It wasn't that bad of a read, in my opinion. Not nearly as bad as
the script was actually
execution.
Much better than the
yeah,
movie.
Not nearly as bad as the execution. Also, there was a whole
opening
that they shot. I found out they shot it because I saw some like B-roll of them doing it, and
I knew that because I think they thought the American audience.
Well, I don't know what the end of that sentence is, but I'm sure it's true.
Yeah, exactly. And then, let's see, episode 10, which is where we're going to cut it off, was Against All Enemies, which still not a movie.
That was a biopic for... What was that? What was Against All Enemies?
That was like the 9/11 one, I think. That was like...
Is it the bunker movie?
And inside like 9/11, inside the Pentagon, inside the White House.
Yeah, okay, yeah. Why didn't that get made?
I don't know. It was a good script. It was a really good script.
What's it called again?
Against All Enemies.
Against All Enemies. I think it was by James Vanderbilt.
That sounds right.
Yeah, that sounds right.
Yeah.
Who's a decent writer, of course.
I wonder what that's all about.
I guess he just turned it into the new White House movie.
Yeah, he just sold a movie for like $1 million called White House Down or something.
Yeah, White House Down. Yeah.
Oh, so he fictionalized it, and he's like, I'll just sell this piece of shit again.
Yeah.
He wouldn't be the first person to do it.
No.
You know, something goes and gets ate up, and things like, well, I'll just change a few things.
That's actually the exact same thing that happened with Knights and Roundtable, because there was one called, there was White House Down, which sold, and then there was another one that came out like, the week after. I can't remember what it was called now. But it had the exact same Die Hard in the White House gimmick.
That's what they do. They're like, oh shit, I got something similar.
Olympus Has Fallen. That's what it was called. Olympus Has Fallen.
Oh yeah.
And it sold too. And right now,
of course it did.
Think they're both doing the in development.
And neither of them will get made.
One company will give up, and they'll be like, oh, thank God, they finally quit. We can stop throwing money into this shit.
Two fucking senior executives, or maybe even junior executives, having a pissing contest.
Isn't White House Down filming?
We could probably talk it out of our ass.
Yeah, I think it is, with Cham Tanning and Jamie Foxx.
Who?
What?
Damn Chaney?
Charming Potato?
Hey, it was good in, what was it?
21
movie.
Okay, I agree with that.
That movie is fantastic.
I really like that movie.
I guess we can...
Okay, so you read Parkland, correct, David?
Yeah, I read all of Parkland.
The JFK biopic.
Biopic.
It's like RoboCop.
Is it like a movie, but they've got robo parts in it?
Yeah. It's RoboCop, except with JFK.
JC, I don't think you
realize
how genius
what you just said. That would
have been
an awesome movie. I would have liked Parkland had that been the case.
If these two movies went together, they'd be awesome.
If they assembled Kennedy back together and then he came back like that, that'd be awesome.
Jesus Christ, JC.
I better stop right now.
We need to go pitch some stuff. I know. Yeah, let's do it. All right, so you guys go ahead and talk about Parkland.
Did you read any of Parkland?
Yeah. Read all of it.
Okay, you read all of it. I read all of it. It's been a while as we've been trying to put this podcast together. I didn't think it was horrible. I think you didn't like it, but I didn't think it was horrible. As far as trying to envision a movie out of it, that's a little rough. Kind of reads like a Grey's Anatomy episode to me, since so much of it takes place at Parkland. I mean, there's not as many chicks in it, mostly guys. But
just a bunch of dudes doing a bunch of other dudes.
Yeah, and I mean, it definitely goes for the whole emotion thing of trying to capture America, or I not even America at the moment, more I guess just the actual innards of the hospital at the moment that it all happened, and them fighting their emotions and trying to keep everything gut checked while they're trying to put Kennedy's brains back in. As a movie, I don't know. As a screenplay, it actually read really decently, I thought. He was really good at explaining everything. Made it entertaining as far as something that's already happened and pretty much everyone already knows going into it what's going to happen. I thought the beginning was a little boring leading up to it, but after it actually happened, and then from then on, I actually found it pretty quick read.
See, I was the exact opposite there. I kind of lost interest after, like, he got shot.
Too long, didn't read.
It wasn't too long. It was just like, it's one of those, I don't think it's a problem of the screenplay. I think it's a problem of the subject material. We've seen so many freaking movies like this. It's just, it's enough. But it is well written, though. It does go quick.
How did you guys think he transitioned, like, his action blocks and stuff like that? I mean, he wasn't too wordy or anything like that?
No, I think his action was excellent, actually.
Yeah.
I think
that's key with something like that, because it sounds like, I know that, like, a lot of the, like, Playtone stuff,
mm-hmm.
seems to have, like, a consistent flow to, like, the narrative. Like, they really enjoy stuff like that. It's not all chopped up into, like, little storylines.
Yeah, no, there's no...
And so you need someone who can write action that gets where it needs to go, keeps going, and then just doesn't drag. And that's... I don't know if that's what you guys felt or whatever.
Well, it dragged for me because I was just bored with the material. It wasn't dragging because of the writing. Like, there's a scene where you actually get the doctors and they're realizing that they're operating on the President of the United States and the weight that that carries. He did get that very well.
Yeah. Like, he's got, like I said, all their emotions, like, written perfectly to where you understand exactly what he's trying to convey. And there's no gray, I guess, is what I'm saying. It's black or white. I mean, he's good that way. There was nowhere in the script where I really thought that's a shoddy way to write that or anything, which, oddly enough, the next screenplay we're going to talk about is full of.
Yeah, this is very competent.
Yeah, it's a very competent, very serious, very well put together screenplay, honestly. And I just today realized that they're going to cast Paul Giamatti and Billy Bob Thornton in it. I don't know as what. I don't know. They didn't say who's playing who. I assume that Giamatti's going to be JFK for the jaw line.
Yeah, he does have that look to him. That's probably the best bet.
Yeah, but it's scheduled for 2013, which is the 50th anniversary of the assassination. Which,
jeez.
But it actually doesn't. It doesn't go into it a whole lot.
No, well, I think, I mean,
it's a very straightforward, like.
I think it chose its angle and sticks with it, even though it's a very specific angle.
Yeah,
which is fine because then you could just use it for an allegory for a bigger story, much like what I think Spielberg was trying to do with Lincoln. He took a very specific moment and tried to make it, you know, more allegorical for everything that was happening, and not only as a bit of the larger context, but also geographically throughout the whole nation at the time. I'm not saying that got accomplished, but I think sometimes those kinds of stories are much better than when you have, like, those full biopics that just whitewash every moment. Like, they have to have a scene, one scene, no matter how simplistic it is, for every, like, major life turn event, and you're just like, well, that's cheesy, that didn't happen. So I think it's a much better decision to choose a specific moment and just try to do your best with symbolism, allegory, and then also tell a really good story about what that angle is.
See, I think that's where the script actually, there is one criticism, is that it does go to a certain thing, like the videotape. And this dude filming the actual assassination, I thought that's when it really kind of actually did lose me. Because I was okay as long as we were in the hospital. But the moment you got outside the hospital, I just lost interest.
Like, maybe it was kind of going beyond, like, a little too big for its own britches. Like, it intentionally constrained itself to the hospital, and then when it tried to tell the overall story, like, you felt uncomfortable because it was no longer the movie. It was now something about the JFK story itself.
Yeah, it seemed like during writing, he realized this wasn't long enough, and it wasn't enough. And he needed to branch out, and then it ended up being about just, I guess you could say it's a life in the day of Kennedy's body after it died, because that's really what happens.
That would be a really great title.
Yeah, that's actually a better title. Just,
yeah, I didn't, once you got outside the hospital and we spent time with the dude, like, negotiating with his videotape, I just didn't care.
See, that's interesting because it shows like the first time that it broke its own rules of what it wanted to do. You lost interest because you're like, well, we've all seen Little Zapruder film. Here it is, just hitting the highlights. Basically, like,
yeah, it's definitely the highlights.
Like some shitty band coming into town. It's like, oh, you remember this song? Let's play it again. But we can't sing it nearly as well as we used to.
Yep.
Instead of trying something
new. That's a great way of putting it.
Yeah.
It is.
Yeah. And trying something new and trying to tell the story from a different angle with you know.
Yeah. That's essentially it, though. I mean, we have broke it down. It's the hospital with his body, and then like the greatest hits surrounding his murder,
yeah.
And obviously the biggest one's the Zapruder film.
That occurs in the screenplay.
Yeah,
yeah.
And, I mean, because then there's like, you know, what would you say, maybe like 5 or 6 pages about the killer, like in his family and
Oswald.
Yeah. Like, you know, like some interaction with his mom that take up like a half page, and then it goes back to the hospital or something.
Well, how do they?
But see, that's okay though, because he actually does end up getting shot and get treated at that hospital.
Oh, that's how they.
So that meant okay. That was okay right. With me.
Yeah,
that's what I was going to ask. How do they tie that? How do they tie Oswald's story in with the hospital? But that's okay. Yeah. That actually is pretty smart.
Yeah.
Where this, like, the Zapruder thing,
seems
a random thing that well, did happen, of course.
Yeah.
To tie it in a story that is called Parkland about the hospital seems a little odd.
Yeah.
But, you know, when you're writing something this big and for people with those kinds of names, there are certain scenes and certain moments you're told have to be in there. And sometimes you just shoehorn them the fuck in. That might be what happened. Might not. I don't know.
I don't either.
But see, that's what's crazy is that it's only 110 pages, and I feel like 20 of them were that damn Zapruder thing. Like, I felt like it was just needed to go. Well, God, I'm surprised this is even getting made. Like, how many people are, like, begging to see this? Like, they're just going to be like, oh, this is awesome.
It's
can't
strictly,
wait to see another movie about some president getting shot.
It's strictly because it's the 50th anniversary. I mean, they're just going to try and make some money off that.
It's going to be, they're going to be like, this is next year's Lincoln.
Yep.
No one cares about Lincoln, though. That's the thing. It's making no money.
But the
no one cares.
The thing is, this will be cheaper, and they'll turn something on it.
Yeah, I mean, this takes place in the same setting.
And if they're going to release it next year, they think it's going to be their prestige, whatever, so they may think maybe play it, so it'll get a few awards. Maybe. I don't know. I don't know what their aims are.
So let's just move on to the final screenplay we're going to talk about.
RoboCop.
The RoboCop remake, which the script we read was written by
Joshua Zatumer. It's not Zatumer.
Oh, my God.
Now... looks like there's a revision draft by Nick Schneck.
Okay, so this draft has revisions by Nick Schenk.
What? Schenk? Oh, wow, I fucked that up. I put the N in the wrong place.
Schenk?
Yeah, I bet it's Schenk. What did we read?
This is what we read.
We read the ones with revisions?
Yes, we read the...
Well, so how fucking terrible was the one without revisions?
January 2012 draft.
So we all read the same one, right?
Yeah.
The one with revisions by Nick Schneck or whatever.
Yeah. And like Adam said, how bad could the original have been? I mean, there's definitely parts of the screenplay where it makes sense that somebody revised it, and it seems like it's not a page one rewrite. It seems like he just found shit that he wanted to insert and shoehorn in, because there's just bad shit all over it.
I think the whole approach was wrong. But we were talking earlier, the first film almost plays like a perfect Arnold Schwarzenegger satire film. If you go back and watch the Paul Verhoeven original 1980s film, it is stuffed full of like these little skits that are on television that are mocking and very satirical of culture, because it's set in the future and you have that ability to, you know, just kind of show how ridiculous things will get. And it did that. Also set against this like weird intercorporation backstabbing drama between two guys that is also heightened beyond believability into almost absurdity. And then you have like RoboCop, who's the, you know, just the the superhero, but not in the same way. It's a lot like, the Barbarian, or Conan the Barbarian, or Batman, or anything like that. It's a really good movie, and you just forget about it. Where this one, I think it realized that the first RoboCop did do that. It had a satirical look at the action film. It had a kind of a postmodern look at the 80s culture, and it wanted to like stake its own claim. Like, I can see it in there. Not, it didn't want to just be a straight action film. So they focused so much on the minutia of like the absurdity of focus groups and how things play as far as culpability and lawsuits, because they, you know, in certain, like, they dealt with whole sections of only creating RoboCop as somewhat human just in case there's a lawsuit. That's the whole point of RoboCop in this,
well, that's in
draft.
Here too.
No. In the new draft.
Okay, yeah.
That makes no sense. That's such a weak motivation to create RoboCop. Whereas in the first film, it's just like, we need a super cop, so we create RoboCop, and there's the other one, and they're competing.
Yeah, but it makes sense. I mean, no, because that's all they give you, is like, we need a super cop.
Yeah, no, you just accept it in the 80s film, where they felt like they needed to justify his existence in this draft, and such a weak reason, because they have these great robots and drones, and I'm sure they all sat around and they had the argument like, well, why does the world need a RoboCop when we have all these drones flying around? Well, but what about culpability in a lawsuit? Oh, well, that's why RoboCop needs to exist. That is so fucking weak. And
they made him the fall guy. That's what they spent 20 pages creating a fall guy.
Yeah, they
literally called him the fall guy to each other.
Yeah, that's what I can't get over in the screenplay, is how everything is so fucking telegraphed. Like, and just, we went ahead and set this up, but you know what? We're gonna explain it in these two lines too. Like, let's have Morgan Freeman come in here and fucking Ernest Freckle. Like, I mean, there's just bad stacked up on bad, and the dialogue is so fucking heavy-handed, and just everything is bad.
Yeah, it needs a page one rewrite, and it doesn't, because it's halfway.
It's in production. Yeah, right now.
I think it might be close to done.
Yeah, I was about to say it's shooting and close to done.
I think it might have been like this week. I think it was supposed to finish.
Like, how many suits did they have by the time it was over? It was like the first one, which the focus groups rejected, which is retarded.
The whole idea, that is all based on one joke.
Yeah.
They wanted to have the 80s RoboCop suit in there so they could not make fun of it, but at least wink to it. So,
but they did make fun of it. They said it looks like a toy from the 80s, and they're all laughing at it.
That's right.
So they did make fun of the fucking original. Like,
and then there's another scene.
It's like, you wouldn't even get paid for this, you idiots.
There's another fucking scene where...
do you think the writers actually had these notes given to them, and they're just writing this with contempt?
They are trying to be too cute.
Yeah.
They were trying to. They saw movies that kind of broke the fourth wall in certain ways, in homage and in other ways, and they wanted to be able to make a remake while being ironic about it. And you can't do that and still try to pull off what they're doing. Like, when they're because the Verhoeven version is, well, he makes very, very explicit films. You know, in RoboCop, the original one, blood was everywhere. Guts was everywhere. They literally, like, two scientists in this draft say, let's keep it PG-13 to one another. And that's exactly what happened. Everything, like, the RoboCop scene where Murphy dies is off-screen because they're trying to keep this one PG-13. And then they literally say it to one another, two characters.
Yeah.
Literally say it to one another later on when they're unveiling RoboCop to Detroit. And another scene, which is something that if my eyes could roll any harder, they would have popped out of my head, was when the character is watching a film, and then in the action block it says some MGM remake to be determined later. Yeah.
Yeah.
And which is basically, since it was an original, it was an original MGM, it was an Orion film.
Yeah.
But just a a total inside baseball wink and nod that is so ham-fisted that just pisses me off.
See, I think they're being sarcastic. See, if you read in they a sarcastic are. Manner, it seems to be okay to me.
No, that's exactly – they are trying their best to be sarcastic. They are desperately wanting you to know how cool they are and how it defeats the fact that they're just making a RoboCop remake.
Well, see, I felt like there a lot of it pertained to like just how the business actually works and how the kind of things you'd get from, you know.
Yeah, like you're saying, but I think that whole thrust, that whole like where the angle they came from was wrong, and it's going to be a mess. When they try to film an action film, when they're not going to be able to handle like that sarcasm mixed with what you know a straight action film, and the fact that it's paced terribly, and
yeah, it's
oh you didn't like the Tehran scene in the beginning, which is just awesome.
Oh, you know what? I didn't mind that.
I was actually being sarcastic.
But as far as like. It's story-wise, since it's the first scene.
I thought the first 25 pages were just fucking awful.
But it's
useless.
It is totally useless.
It is totally useless. But what they're doing is like the beginning of the 80s film is basically a commercial for Omni Consumer Products, and that just kind of sets that world. And they try to do the same thing, but it's a mess.
But see, that's just where the genius of the first movie comes in. He found a way with just a commercial to do it, and they spent five pages of expensive action with these drones.
Yeah, but they're just like anybody else. They're told you got to fucking do shit in the first 10 pages. Shit's got to blow up. Whereas the first RoboCop, it's literally a commercial and a newscast in the first 10 pages, kind of setting the world. It got too big for its britches because it wants to be. The army and the world, and then narrows itself down to Detroit. Then it gets back bigger again. Then he goes back down to Detroit, and then he's trying to handle his family, which his family was intentionally left out of the first RoboCop, except in flashback.
Yeah,
it's all over the place, and it's going to try to appeal to the summertime action crowd, which is not going to know what the fuck it's looking at.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff in here that just feels worn. Like, it's been done. Like, when he first shows up and goes through the crime scene, you already know how that's going to be shot and how it's going to look, and it's just going to feel tired.
Yeah, and they're trying to paper that over with its, like, layer of ironic sarcasm. They're like, look what we're doing. We're making a remake of RoboCop, but don't worry. We know we're doing it, so it's okay.
Well, it worked for 21 Jump Street, where the guy basically just yells at the audience.
Yes, because it went all the way to the other side, and it was earnest about it. It went all the way over. Yeah. If RoboCop did that, it would have a shot. But it wants to be everything to everybody, and it can't. It's going to be a mess.
Well, yeah, it's going to be. It's not, yeah.
I mean, we don't
know. It was hard to get through this one.
It was very hard to finish the script. And, I mean, all we can hope is that it improved. By the time they got to production 6 months later.
If they picked an angle and stripped down all the bullshit around it.
Yeah.
The RoboCop story, I mean, it's... Well, the 80s version, I mean, it's a pretty obvious Jesus symbolism. And they fucking shoot his hand off. You know, and then he resurrects and he saves the city. If you just want to go straight back to doing it and just do hey, it's RoboCop nostalgia plus the Jesus metaphor, it'll make its money as an action film.
Yeah.
Or if it goes all the way with satire, it's not going to make its money, but it might be coherent. But if it tries and the emotional, we cranked up his emotional receptors. He's that how he loves his kid for a moment.
Yeah.
And
he's back into social mode.
He's back. Yeah.
Oh, he has to come out of combat mode for that.
I would love for the writer to try to tell me what metaphor he was trying to drive home or what criticism of society he was trying to detail in that, which I'm sure was 120% bullshit.
Yeah.
But. When it tries to do,
I feel like a terrible writer when you guys talk like that because I'd never like think of choices that way. Well, sometimes I'm just like, yeah, that might be cool.
Well, generally, if you have a solid story and you can just tell your story, and then maybe later you can add in some, you know, some symbolism or some sort of bigger criticism, that's fine. There's other people that approach it the opposite way, whatever. But when you try to do everything, and then when you try to jam-pack it in with people like Gary Oldman and Sam Jackson's going to be in it.
Joel Kinnerman from The Killing.
Yeah, but I mean...
He's not a huge actor, but...
No, but they don't need one. They need...
He's in a suit the whole time.
They needed someone in a suit. Okay, I know I'm talking too much, but I have to mention this scene kind of mid-early when, like, his body parts are separate from the suit because he wants to see the suit. Like, they call in the pit crew because he wants to see the suit. I don't know if you guys remember this.
Yeah.
So he is, like, his head, his hand, not his arm, his hand, because his arm's gone. His head, his hand, his lungs, and his heart are in goo, in fucking goo, and he's awake, and because he wants to see the suit outside of himself. Mm-hmm. What, and it's supposed to be an emotional scene where it's like, what have you done to me? And it's going to look fucking ridiculous. It's going to look like an old Tenet episode of Doctor Who with a $5 budget. And it's going to
grape jelly. And
you can't make that look good because it's going to be fucking, what did you say his last name was? Kellerman?
Joel Kinnerman,
Kinnerman,
I think.
Kinnerman's head. Floating in goo going, oh my god,
what have you done?
And how's that gonna
taste so bad?
it's good. Like, you know how to handle that? You know how to handle that well? The scene in what's the Duncan Jones film?
Moon?
No, the second one.
Source code.
When you finally see his body in the little deep freeze.
Yeah.
and he's kind of, and that's an emotional scene that, you know, because he obviously can't speak because he's in a coma or whatever. Spoiler alert. And that plays perfect. That's also because he's an incredibly talented writer and
director.
I don't think he directed that though.
Oh.
Yeah.
I think he did.
Yeah, Duncan Jones didn't direct Source Code. But I think the two of them fucking can't remember who directed it, but they had that moment, and this is going to look ridiculous. A floating Joel Kinnaman head and goo with his heart and lungs hanging out, looking at his robo suit going, oh my god. It's going to be terrible. Because then you're also expected to buy all the other shit, which is like totally different on the emotional scale. It's all over the place.
I like how they justify the China angle, too. It's like, we get it. You want to release your movie in China.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's happening more and more, though.
Yeah.
I will say this, though. I accidentally read a film called Parker, a screenplay called Parker instead of Parkland. And...
Jason Statham
film.
Yeah.
And I read that before I reread RoboCop, and the action blocks in that were so terrible and so long that when I reread RoboCop, the one thing I will say is it reads smooth action block wise.
Yeah.
Like, you know, actually.
See, I didn't have that problem. Because I just saw Parker, or that just as Jason Statham, so I could just create it all in my own head.
Yeah, as far as like being able to visualize it, yeah, but like he overwrote the fuck out of it.
And that's whatever.
That's neither here nor there because we're not talking about it. But I think it primed me for when I wrote RoboCop. I was like, oh my god, action blocks that can be less than 10 lines long. If I'm going to say something good about RoboCop, I will say that at least the action block seems to be written by somebody who understands how people read screenplays and then translate it into making visual pictures.
That may be true, but there's nothing memorable in RoboCop at all.
I agree with that.
Screenplay.
No, yeah. There isn't. You're right. Because it's a mess. And it's trying to be a commentary, I think, on our market.
It is.
Yeah, our market-driven focus group bullshit, and it fails at that.
Which isn't interesting at all. No one gives a shit.
And ironically, I'm sure all those ideas were probably focus-tested by MGM. Because they knew that they... Because they only had so many... they only had so many properties they could remake. They needed money. So you know they focus group the shit out of it. And they're like, let's focus group a focus group. Make a movie out of it and throw RoboCop in it. And Gary Oldman's free.
Can you imagine over. When that meeting occurred? Wait, you want a focus group? Another focus group?
You know what? I think that happens probably all the time.
Yeah, I'm sure it does, yeah.
And it's just, there's, I only think that you could strip this down. Like, I do agree, you have to do a page one. Because, I mean, the character itself, he just isn't interesting. They turned him into a superhero where he's not even going to be vulnerable enough to make people think that he's going to lose. Well, I thought they were going to try and do that, but it's just like, I feel like the point of what they're trying to do is make him a symbol of Detroit. To get people to rise up with him. And I think this is something that the Dark Knight failed for me, is that the cops actually rose up, but the people of the city did not. They never took it back. And I feel like that would have made a much cooler moment had RoboCop gone down and the people rose up and helped him out.
I can agree with that.
You take that and may have that as a consistent theme, you probably have a pretty good movie.
Yeah. I mean, there's no reason why it wouldn't work either. Overall, I mean,
watch the 80s version of Netflix. It goes.
I've got it. Got it in HD. I was actually waiting till after this because I wanted to be the one of us three who hadn't seen the original.
Oh yeah.
Because I didn't want to compare.
Okay.
The script. I just wanted to read the script as its own.
That's fair.
As its own thing. So yeah, now I'll watch it.
He is not a dynamic character, RoboCop. But the film is not about RoboCop. It isn't the first one. This one tries, like I said, it tries to serve so many masters that it becomes a mess, which is the downfall of a lot of films, especially a lot of films that people are going to invest over $100 million in.
Yeah.
So that's my thoughts on that movie.
I don't think making it violent would have made any difference, though. Like, I think it's cool, like, in the first one, you see him get shot up, but I don't think necessarily you need to see that.
I would agree with that. There are ways that you can have the same emotional impact without, you know, doing... There's only a few directors that are as explicit as Paul Verhoeven. So, yeah, that's fine. But doing a wink and a nod 20 pages later about, hey, let's keep it PG-13, I think is unnecessary.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It's the getting the choppa of, you know, modern movies. So, but yeah.
I don't feel like there's really anything left to be said. It's not a good script. It's already going to be a terrible movie.
I'm not going to say it's going to be a terrible movie.
You never know, because sometimes...
have you seen the dude's suit?
I have seen a couple of different versions. I don't know which one's which version. I mean, in the script, there's four or five different ones.
I'm assuming the black is SWAT mode.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah.
I will say this. If they shot everything that's in the screenplay, and maybe, you know, maybe they tried a few other things, and they shot everything, all of it. If someone who had a clear vision after it was completely shot and a good editor sat down, I bet they could cut a decent movie out of it.
Yeah.
I bet they could.
Well, that's to bring up something that's kind of similar. It's like Men in Black went into production without a screenplay.
Yeah, and without the second half.
Men in Black 3, that's what I mean.
Yeah.
And just didn't have an idea. It's not a bad freaking movie. I find it better than the second one and maybe even the first one. I mean, it's actually a pretty strong action movie, I think. I might be alone in that, but...
Did it do business?
I'm sure it did. I don't know. I don't have a clue. But I enjoyed Men in Black 3 quite a bit.
It happens, not all the time, but it happens. But, you know, most of the time when it reads like John Carter, it ends up looking like John Carter.
I love how we got John Carter's stupid ass in this.
We cannot bring up John Carter. out of all the John Carters over the summer, then there was one Men in Black 3. All right, let's wrap this up. We've been blabbering forever. Shit.
It gives you enough to cut.
Yeah. I don't know when we're ever going to have a chance to do this again.
So, Christmas.
Christmas. Okay, we'll have to pick out a couple more screenplays to read for the Christmas episode.
We'll have to have one be Christmas themed. Sounds good.
All right, let's sign off here.
I totally forgot how I used to sign off on these.
It doesn't matter. Goodbye, everybody.
See ya.
Have a Thanksgiving. We recorded this the day before Thanksgiving. Have a Thanksgiving.
Yeah, Merry Christmas, because that'll be whenever I get around to posting this.
Oh, yeah, don't worry about Thanksgiving. Fuck Thanksgiving. Merry Christmas.
What the fuck is the internet?